Michelle.
Daryl.
It's been a while since we've done a solo episode, and I was actually going to do a solo episode last night, and I was like, two nights ago. I was like, no, there are some things that I want to tell Michelle and involve Michelle in this, and so this is this. You don't know what we're going to talk about, but this is this.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So this is going to be a little bit different than I think most of our episodes where it's just Michelle and I, or it's just me. It's going to definitely be very heady and reflective. So if this isn't your vibe, come back next week for the next episode. But I'm going to go real deep into some thoughts that I've had and specifically share and process some of them with Michelle. So thought number one was sparked from listening to the podcast, listening back to the podcast with Lindsay Joe Scott, Michelle and myself. And I've listened to this podcast 3 times. And I just wanted to share with you, Michelle, how healing having you a part of that conversation was for me. So much of my life has been spent feeling like an imposter because I struggle to get things done. And it's like, there's so much in my head and I have all these ideas and I can be such a futurist and such a strategist. And I just realized how important you have really become in my ability to love myself more. And I know that that sounds so weird to say, but it's true, because when you were saying on the podcast, there's this quote and you said, yeah, like we'll have meetings and Daryl will give me 15 things and I'll prioritize those 15 things and then remind you, hey, like you brought this up a few weeks ago. Do you still want to do that? And just creating space for accepting me for who I am in that process. And then listening back to that just made me realize how unique you are as an individual to know your strengths, to allow someone like myself to be able to lean into my strengths, really for, this is going to sound odd, for the first time really in my career. So thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for saying that. For me, thinking about that conversation, so going way back to when you called me or like, hey, I have this like job that I think you'd be good at. When you called, I was like in this really burnt out, tired place and feeling like, ugh, like I don't want a calling. Like that was kind of, you know, I was coming out of this place of, I like work at this place because I like love it. I feel called to it, you know? And then, you know, I had 2 kids, I had one on the way and I was like, I don't have time for a calling besides my kids. And so when you were like, oh, I got this job, it's like, I'm sure it's cool, but like, I don't have time. I don't have time for a calling right now. Like I need a job that I can do and turn off and that like I like, you know, like I can check off some boxes.
Yeah.
And so we like had a couple conversations. I was like, yeah, that sounds cool. I just like don't know if I can really do that. Like it sounds like a calling to me. And then we had this conversation with Jeff, and it was like, yeah, we have all these ideas and we just need somebody to get them done. And I was like, oh, I don't have to come up with any ideas. That doesn't sound like a calling. That sounds like my sweet spot. So it was really kind of in that picture. I was like, okay, just clarifying. I don't want to come up with anything, but I am more than happy to take what you come up with and do it. And I think that is really where throughout my career, I have found my like my niche or niche, depending on how you say it.
Niches.
And so I have found that like that is who I like work best with. And so it's been really fun and really rewarding. And I feel like it has been, I say a lot that this has been the job I didn't know I needed, that like it is like, I feel like I can trust this big vision and these strategies and ideas and all of that. And then I can actually just help execute. When people ask me what I do, I say like, so I work for these really incredible people and they are at 10 all the time. They know like steps 8, 9, and 10, like are amazing. But what they don't know is steps like 1 through 5. And that's like my spot. It's like, great, let's start at 1 and like, I'll get you to 8 and then you can, you know, make it awesome.
No, and so it's funny that you bring it, you brought the conversation back to our first conversation, which I guess is like what, almost 2 years ago now. And I have always felt so guilty for not being that leader that's a like awesome strategist, a very highly engaged leader, a great coach, a great mentor, a great nurturer, a great partner, if I wasn't doing more of the doing. And so even when we were having that conversation, I'm not sure if you noticed or realized, but I very tiptoed around like, yeah, like it's mostly execution, because I have always perceived that as a bad thing of like, no one's going to just love executing things. And it's very much in that black or white, all or nothing type thinking that has been somewhat of a limiting factor throughout my life, because I've been so afraid to just go, hey, this just needs to get done and this is your role and get these things done. I'm always like, oh yeah, we'll do this together and champion, like even big teams that I've had. And it's not a negative thing to have people that are in their strengths for things that they love, because at the end of the day, that's more meaningful for you to not have to think about some of the components that are uncomfortable for you. And then same for me, it just makes things move so much more efficiently. And also, I didn't know I needed this in terms of the sense of finding the space where I really truly could create and contribute from 95% of my strengths versus 50% of my strengths. And it's been very useful. Like, I'm finding more love for myself. I know that sounds weird, but I am, just in the fact that every single day I'm not feeling less than, because the things that I'm not interested in doing, the things that I'm not good at doing, I'm not forced to do. And instead, it's partnership.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's interesting that you say you didn't feel like a good, you know, like leader or mentor, because for me, that like puzzles me, because I'm like, I feel like you are a great leader because you are like, hey, here's this awesome thing I want to get done. Let's do it. And it's like, cool, I'm going to go do that. And I don't feel like hindered by it, or like you're going to jump in and micromanage the way I'm doing it. But you have, in essence, led to this, you know, like, hey, here's the direction we're headed. Like, let's do that. Yeah. And that, you know, and I recognize that, like, that is not everyone, you know, but that is me. And I think there are a lot of me's out there in the world, which is also kind of the appeal of freelancing. And like, one of the things I feel like I've learned over the last year and change of being here is that, like, there's a need for every skill set and like every type of person. And, you know, especially speaking specifically of Lindsay Jo Scott, like every type of brain, like there is so much space in the world for the thing you can do. And like you're saying, the thing that you can do might be the puzzle piece that fits alongside someone else's thing. And you both end up better because of it. You both end up more complete.
I love that you said more complete, because so much of my existence and early tapes was I had to have it all figured out. And I think that a lot of us have that conditioning, is in order to be successful, you have to have all of the right answers. And whether some people are going to be willing to admit that or not, we do try to do everything alone. Because it's like, yep, that's my worth, that's my value. And if I'm not contributing everywhere, then my value is then reduced or perceived to be reduced, because it doesn't feel like, oh, real team player, whatever that may look like. And so you have to be so proficient at so many things. And for me, that was the value prop. Is like, yeah, I can do all these things, maybe not all of them really well. And even though internally, I really just want to focus on people and thinking about the future and how things could look in the future and being wild and having crazy ideas and not really creating that space for myself, ultimately created a lot of dissonance in the relationship that I had with myself. And what you have taught me is really good language of who you are and then also who you're not. And I think in the who you're not is just as important as who you are. Like for me, it was always yes and. Yes and, yes and, yes and, yes and, yes and. That was the superpower. Oh yeah, I could do that. Oh and yeah, I can do that. Oh yeah, and I can do that. Because then I'm valuable, right? Mm. That's the story that I told myself. Mm-hmm. If I'm in everything and I'm doing everything, I'm seen, I'm not expendable in that sense because it's right. I can do it from strategy to execution or whatever that may look like, even though it's not great, at least it's being done. Mm-hmm. And while there are seasons where that may be necessary in, you know, certain stages of your career, et cetera, that is not where you are going to find peak performance. And so what I wanted to ask you is how did you get so comfortable knowing who you're not and then articulating it so well, like, and without judgment, or it's just, you're like, oh yeah, I don't find interest in that. And I'm okay with that. Like, first of all, is it bullshit?
What, that I like don't find interest in some things?
Yeah. No. Like, okay, great. So then disclaimer off, we're all good.
Yeah. So I worked at this summer camp growing up that I loved. And part of the staff training was this book called The Delicate Art of Dancing with Porcupines. And it's a silly name, but it's a super simple concept around working styles. And so I think people get really hung up. Well, I'll say I really love personality tests. I feel like it tells you a lot about yourself and other people, and you can like understand each other better because you understand where someone's coming from. Like, I think that's the point of personality things, not trying to put someone in a box. Disclaimer over. So, but this one is specific to your working style. And so it is, you are thinking about how do I act in this working space? And so for that, it was working at this summer camp. And so we are together for 24 hours a day, 6 days a week. Like, we needed to work together and support each other. And it was an exhausting job. Like, we just, we needed to know each other really well. And so we would do the rubric test, and then you kind of get sorted into your sections. And so I get like sorted into my section, and the person facilitating had us like really look around at each other. And it was the first time that someone had said, like, here are your strengths, here are your weaknesses, and here's how this person that is across the spectrum from you, here are their strengths that complement your weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And like all of those pieces. And so like look around for the other people you're going to be working with and figure out like how you work together, because you are going to have all these, these little kids running around who need you, and you're not going to be able to meet every single one of their needs. You were not designed to, you know? So the way that you function as a person, let's lean into that and let everyone kind of lean into their own thing. And that will give us kind of this whole grid.
Yeah.
And then, so that's kind of always been in my brain. And then as we like go along, I'm realizing that like I'm a bit of a steamroller. I like am an extrovert. I'm like a dominant personality type. And so realizing that like my opportunity is, yes, to like lean into that, but also to be able to pull back and say like, hey, I can't do this as well as you can. And that I needed to leave space. That's one of the things I'm talking to my like toddler, my 4-year-old Everly, about, because we are very similar. I see so much of myself in her. I'm trying to teach her, like, because of who you are, you will have the opportunity to make space for people who need space made for them. And my middle daughter, Opal, she needs to be given the space. She's never going to take space. And so watching them in this season has really helped me even more refine that idea that like some of us have this sort of gift and we need to make space so that everyone gets to kind of be in their right puzzle piece.
Mm-hmm.
Did that answer your question?
No,
I forgot your question.
It totally. Thanks for admitting that too. I think that's one of those things. I'm glad we started using that language in the Lindsay Jo Scott podcast, because I think a lot of times people see these like wildly produced things and it's like, no, like it's good to get lost in the conversation of what we're saying. You did, and you brought up some additional thoughts. So I'm a certified Gallup strengths coach. I've brought it to almost every organization that I have been a part of. And while it was always helpful to have that perspective of, oh, here's these people's strengths, what I'd always realize, and even though you have training on how to coach and navigate around it, what I'd always realized is people always wanted to be associated with those high visibility strengths, mm-hmm. the strengths that are associated with strategy and futurism and, you know, kind of these like the things that are glorified in tech, if you will, or not even just in tech, glorified in the world, right?
Everywhere.
Everywhere. And so when you would find people that didn't come back that way, they would feel less than.
Hmm.
And so throughout the years, I think that I took this negative association to that archetype, if you will, the executing archetype as bad because of how often people associated it with bad. And you're the first person that, because you would very much fit into the influencing, leadership by influencing and executing, which, by the way, most people fit into, ironically enough. You're the first person that has really had a good enough sense of identity to go, well, yeah, that's fine. And that's where I'm most proficient. And that's where I'm happiest. And it's allowed me the space to go, oh, wait, really? Like that's true. And I'm sure you can see, like, I've been skeptical about giving you things. Yeah, it is. Cause you're like, oh no, like, do you want me to do that? I can do that. And I'm like,
and
no.
It will take me no time. That's like that has been kind of a learning thing for me. We were talking about like answering an email. You're like, that will take me 30 minutes. I was like, what? That will take me 45 seconds. And I had no idea that that was a thing. Like, I think we don't talk about those sorts of things enough. And so because you have been very open about like, yeah, that's going to take me a long time, that gave me the space to be like, yeah, no, can I just do that for you? Because it will not take me that amount of time. And you can go do the other stuff that like, I am truly like not interested in doing.
So that brings, like, you did the perfect transition and segue somehow, but that openness to share and the willingness to share around things of strength and things of weakness, I think is so important to have in your world, like that true honesty and transparency and being able to allow that to be met with the appropriate response and grace. And sometimes you have to potentially create that. Because that type of health may not be around you. It's going to require you to go first and be brave about going first. It really is transformational when you can have conversations about it. Like, look at Michelle and I are laughing about this concept, and I've never had this type of conversation in my life. You know, usually coaching conversations with, you know, either leaders that I work with or my boss have been very difficult because the feedback was always feedback that it's just around things that I am not good at. And instead of that leader recognizing that, or instead of me having honest and transparent and non-fear-based conversations about it, you get to a place where everyone is working more productively. And also there's a lot more happiness. What it's going to require is one, more conversations, but two, making sure that we're putting the right people around the right people as an organization, from a freelancer perspective. Like, we have to pay attention to the systems around it, like the hiring practices, have to change, right? Do we have a good balance of strategic thinkers and executors? Do we have a good balance of this personality or this archetype and this archetype? Like, it really has to be something that is systemic in our ideology and our organizations and our even our friendships, right? And even in our marriages, like this type of like honest conversations about who we are, what we're good at and what we're not good at, is something that I hope we can find more space for, specifically the not good at, and it not being met with shame or like, oh yeah, well, let's put you in some programs or let's get you in an executive class to do X, Y, or Z. You know, it's like, or what if we're like, okay, you love those things, go do those things better. Mm-hmm. Let's find someone that we can partner to help get the other things done. Then you have two people that are working at 100% proficiency versus two people working at 25% proficiency, because that's what it is. That's the reduction. Mm-hmm. It's not a 50% reduction. It's an extensive magnitude, an extensive multiplier in reduction of productivity when you're outside of your proficiency zone. Like to the example of the email, yes, it is going to take me 30 minutes to your 2 minutes. That is the perfect example in how many of our worlds are being lived out of this place of being in 30% proficiency because we're not willing to have a conversation about things that we're just not interested in and not good at, or mm-hmm. not good at.
I'm going to go look for this article and cite my source, but, I think it's so interesting. It brings up this article that I read on, leaning into your strengths. I feel like this is kind of the other piece that kind of brings me to being able to say like, yeah, I'm not good at that, which is like, if you could take all the courses you want on, you know, writing a quicker email or whatever, you know, and I could take all the courses I want on like strategic thinking and, you know, future planning or whatever. And maybe I will take that skill from, you know, the like 10 to 20% to like 30%, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. 30% is still failing, right? And I've taken all these courses and I'm still failing at right. it and I still don't like it, you know, where if instead I lean in on like, oh man, I'm going to listen to this book on productivity and, you know, like I'm going to take the course on writing a better email and mm-hmm. you're going to take a course on future and that's going to take your, you know, 80% to a 95%. Like that is a much better use of our time than me trying to learn to take my weakness and like turn it into, you know, still a failing grade.
Yeah. Yeah.
When someone else can do it at 95% or 80% without even thinking about it, mm-hmm. like that, it doesn't make any sense.
And it makes us better team members and teammates and contributors ultimately, because if you're doing something that's outside of your proficiency at 20% and there's someone on the team that could do it at 100%, you're taking away from the ultimate goal, the ultimate outcome from the team, because you're selfish enough to not want to have that. Selfish is probably the wrong word because I don't want this to be super negative. Unwilling or unaware enough to be able to have the conversation to just go, hey, I'm not interested in this. Who could own this? And if no one answers, okay, great. Maybe they're one that's identifying that you need that person. You need that person in the room. Or two, it's identifying, okay, great. This is going to take me a little bit longer to do this. And then now you're creating that space for yourself to go, oh, it's giving me some space that's going to take longer. That expectation has been set. Everyone knows it's going to take me 6 weeks to get back to you on that email because I've set that expectation. And so I think it's this opportunity to just reflect on who we are as contributors mm-hmm. to our world, because I haven't done that. I have not been good at doing that, because for me, the team player is a team player that's just willing to just buckle up and do it all. And it's like, no, like you wouldn't have a pitcher. Oh man, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this. Let's see if I can do this. Sports aren't my thing.
Oh yes. I can't wait. I can't wait. I can't wait for this.
You wouldn't have a pitcher that's also a goalie. Nailed two it. Different sports. Anyways,
great. You did so good. I mean, you wouldn't have a pitcher who's also a goalie. So you, it's exactly right. You would also not have a pitcher who is also a shortstop, but it's neither here nor there.
Yes, what she said. But it's that concept of like why Michael Jordan didn't do well in baseball. He had every resource available. That's a thing, right? That was a thing.
I love when you try to talk about sports. It's my favorite thing.
Yeah. So great with sports, but that is Michael Jordan, right? It was Michael Jordan that went from basketball to baseball.
Yes.
So it's funny that I know this because I'm not in the sports world, but this is quoted so often. And I think we miss how that can translate and connect to our lives is there are just things that you're going to be good at, that you're interested in, and there are going to be things that you're not good at and that you're not interested in. And why should we apologize for that? Like, why should that be a space we apologize for?
And I also think it ultimately, like, again, like in a corporate setting, it ends up falling out on the underlings, which like, that's kind of where my, like most of my experience has been, because some boss of mine will go into a room because they have a seat at the table and be like, yeah, we're going to do that. I can do that. I can do that. I can do that. And then they're just going to hand me all the stuff they don't want to do. And it just is like, cool, whatever. And then I'm going to do it. I'm going to like make it awesome. And then they're going to go get all the credit for it.
Yeah.
Like that is what's happening. And I think that's where like all of the great, whatever you want to call it, reshuffle, resignation, whatever. I'm over the names. But that's where like freelancers are going to have this incredible power where they aren't behind a boss anymore. They're not behind somebody. They can say, this is my skill set. You need it. And they will get the credit that they deserve for the awesome stuff that they are really good at.
Yeah. If they don't fall into the trap, I think that's the thing is like we go from the traditional work environment, which is very much conditioned by primary, secondary, post-secondary education, is very conditioned to be conformist and also to be as generalist as possible. Like I can see it happening right now with my daughter. And we go to an incredible school. Like it's STEM principles, it's project based, and like it is one of the top schools in the nation. And yet they're doing that same thing where she's like, the teacher's like, oh, you know, Livy's just not really taking up to fractions. And you're like, okay, well, awesome. She's an incredible artist and she's incredible here, 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 and here. And we've spent a disproportionate amount of time on this parent-teacher conference about the thing that she's not good at. And we didn't celebrate all the things that she's doing really, really well. Mm-hmm. And then that builds, right? Then it goes into high school and then you go into the workforce and then it builds, it builds, it builds. And then we get to this place where we're like, okay, I'm exhausted. I'm quitting. This isn't fitting. I don't know why it's not fitting. I don't know why I want to quit, but I'm quitting. And then you go to be a freelancer. Now you're a freelancer and you have that same conditioning of like, okay, now I'm a writer, but I also have to figure out graphic design and I have to figure out social media and I have to figure out marketing. And then you feel like a failure when you're not able to do all of those things. And yet if we really became more of a collective versus an individualistic society, and I think freelancing has the opportunity to do that, where we can share resources and say, you know, like I think Paris was a great example of this when she said she reached out on Twitter and said, hey, I need help with this. Like, what would that look like if we said freelancing isn't just freedom from the typical work environment, it's embracing a more collective way of working together. Because I know right now there is a dozen people that would trade work in a heartbeat for the exact skill that you may have, that I may have, that we may have, if we would just be willing to communicate it. Hey, I can't build websites, but you build my website, I'll do all the writing for yours. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I think it gives us the opportunity to do both things, right? Where you can really be in your specialty and it can make you appreciate all of the things that are outside of your specialty. Because there's certainly a balance, right? Like we're talking so much on this one side because I think we overdo it on the other side. But you know, we're talking a lot about you need to specialize and you need to kind of own these pieces of you. But the thing that should allow you to do is say like, man, I love this thing. I'm going to do really great at this thing. And that should allow us to do what you're doing, which is look at someone who is not the same as you mm-hmm. and appreciate it more because yeah. they have a skill set that you do not have. Instead of creating these like silos of like, well, those are those kinds of people and these are these kinds of people. I would hope that like that comes out of this conversation where it is like, man, like, I love doing this thing. Daryl loves doing this thing. Jeff loves doing this thing. And because of that, we can create a really incredible team and a complete picture.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the analogies of like puzzles and pictures, because that's really what is underneath this is like things have like fit together, right? Like that is life of things just fitting together to create something bigger than we can see with just our one puzzle piece. And I like the positive spin on it because it is easy to go like, oh, I'm just not good at that. So I'm going to go shove this off to the person that it, but that's like, no, like there's positivity underneath all of it. The other thing, hard transition, we can come back here with the other thing that came up on my very long walk listening to old podcasts was the power in hearing yourself. And that sounds weird because not everyone can have a podcast, but there is something that is important, at least for me. Maybe this isn't fit. I want to talk about it was the whole point. But because you've worked in radio, so I'm interested to see if this is universal, but the power in just being able to hear your words, hear the way that you're thinking, hear the way that you're processing, and hearing all that back has been really interesting for me. Like I've done lots of, you know, presentations and keynotes in front of and I never would listen back to them because I'm like, oh, I'm going to criticize myself. And yeah, you do that for the first few. But once you get through it, it's all just learning and it's all just processing. And then also it's a record of yourself and like how little of that do we actually have?
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing people say the most, like I would wager, I should do a survey. I would wager that most of our guests do not listen to their own episode. But I think at the core of what you're saying is the ability to self-talk kindly. We're so good at, I call it scratching people's eyes at 7 a.m. I'll explain that, which is like we hurt other people before they can hurt us. And I think we do that to ourselves too. We tear ourselves down before someone else can do it. And so being able to get at that root of, I'm not going to say something negative to myself. I'm going to hear myself for the positives, for the strengths, and not only focus on my weaknesses and the stuff where I can improve. I think that's kind of at the root of what you're saying. And that's like wildly important for us to be able to do for ourselves. Yeah. Again, not selfishly, but because that frees us up to see that in other people. We're hard on ourselves. We're hard on other people. If we can start practicing that kindness for ourselves, we can do the same thing for other people.
Yeah. What was it like to just show up to this? No idea what we're going to talk about. Let's record it. Weird, cryptic 11 p.m. Messages.
We're going to record this tomorrow. No, it's fun. It's interesting to kind of be on this side of, I don't know what we're going to talk about. Am I going to have anything to say? And, you know, be able to say that now to our guests and say like, I know it feels weird to not know what we're going to talk about, but I promise it will be easy because again, that is in your strength is like, I'm going to ask you a question and I'm going to help you get to a place where you can say what you really think.
Yeah.
Like that is such a huge strength of yours.
Yeah. 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 Thank you. I appreciate that. And that's another thing. It's recognizing and having good language towards other people that I think that I want to say that you do really well is you are able to capture that and go, oh, hey, I noticed that about you. That's awesome. Like there's just those little nuggets are so like, it just really fills me up where I'm like, I got to write that down and just save that for a bad day. But there's so much power in that, specifically around calling out strengths, because I can hear things and hear Michelle's feedback. And it's so counterintuitive to what we're used to hearing from a negative point of view. Like, think about it. The example that you just gave where you're like, oh yeah, you listen to things for edits. You listen for things that are wrong. What if we started listening for things that are right, right? What if collecting those things, you're like, oh, that was really good, right? Because I started listening to more things that I do well on the podcast because of your feedback of like, oh, you do this thing really well. And then I'm looking for that. And like, okay, how do I keep doing this thing well? So it's the thank you, it's a congr- but it's just that recognition in someone else. Like being able to recognize someone else's strengths and then go, I see this in you and that's awesome. Keep doing it. High five. Can change someone's world.
Well, and I think that's probably why I love editing the podcast, because if I just went through and listened for like, nope, 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 like that's no fun, you know? But instead I get the opportunity to say like, oh man, that is such a sweet story. I want to make sure we highlight that, you know, like, oh, I want to keep that piece. I want to make sure we keep that piece, you know? And so sometimes episodes end up being wildly long and I'm like, nah, well, everything was good. But being able to say like, these are the best things. I think we do ourselves a disservice when it's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. I want to, we need to have, anytime you're making a decision list of, you know, I have space for three things and I have 15 to choose from. You are going to kill yourself trying to pick out the bad ones if a lot of them are good. But if instead you can say, man, these three are awesome. We can't lose these.
Yeah.
You know, then your decision is made for you and you still value the things that you have to cut out.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Or the people or, you know, whatever the list is.
The people. Which is that it's a good point. It could be people. Like it very much could be people. Michelle, how do we end this thing?
Yeah. I want to say one.
I hope we keep
piece.
All of this, by the way, I, yeah, like we'll as raw as possible.
I think the something that kept coming up for me, and because you are so musical, it actually shocks me that you haven't said it. But one of the ways that I used to talk about, so I took that course when I was in high school and did the whole like Delicate Art of Dancing with Porcupines. The book is amazing. You should read it. It's great. And so I took that, and when I would do that training for my teams, I would talk about how like Played Mary Had a Little Lamb with one note is great. But if you can add chords and, you know, like jazz, you get something so much more beautiful. And being able to, with handbells, for instance, you know, like you could play one person can play the bells and it is nice, but you get the whole picture when you have a whole team playing together. And so I think let's just, for this week, you know, practice ways to see that in each other, to be more kind than necessary and appreciate that that makes us all better. It gives us all a fuller, more beautiful piece of music.
And until next time, my dearest friends, peace.